Are you concerned about the growing influence of political extremism, hyperpolarization, and misinformation? Well, you're not alone. This is the American Values Coalition podcast, where we explore the root causes of these societal ills and provide you with strategies to counter them. My guest today is Rich Loges, founder of Leaving MAGA. Rich, welcome to the AVC podcast.
It's my pleasure, Nap, to be here. It's good to see you again from our original meeting at Principles First recently.
Yes, which I have some questions about that too, which I'll be asking you later. But first, let's get into a little bit of your story. So you came from originally being a strong supporter of Donald Trump, and even to the point of podcasting and op-ed writing and that sort of thing. So tell me, what first attracted you to the Trump candidacy?
Sure. Before Trump ran the first time, I was someone, I would consider myself a political but also ignorant and very cynical person. And my belief at the time was that the entire established political order needed to be obliterated. So I gravitated to MAGA because I thought that we needed to break a lot. And I had voted third party many times in my voting history. I saw Trump as someone who was the right person for the job at the time. He seemed willing and able to want to take a flamethrower to the two-party system. I believe that both parties were the same. So we wound up getting a disruptor. It's just that we got a disruptor who turned out to be antithetical and anathema to democracy. And I wasn't just a partisan Trump voter. I was a volunteer. I did grassroots work. I wrote part of the call script. After election night in 2016, I became a MAGA pundit. I was writing for lots of MAGA-friendly media. And my life inside MAGA was someone I identified as a MAGA nationalist. Those were my values. My values were based in nationalism and isolationism. And I look back on that now, and I'll get to in a moment some of the reasons I left. But when I look back on that right now, I have come to realize, as we look at our current political climate, that it's much easier to break something than it is to actually build it. But I believe that we needed to break everything politically and build anew. I wasn't interested in a rebuild. I wanted the entire system torn down and then started anew. And I was wrong to have thought that, but it was my genuinely held belief. And that was really my entree into MAGA. It wasn't policy or ideology. It was more so this belief that the system had failed us and that we needed something new. And I want to say, as not as a self-defense here, Nap, but in trying to understand the appeal of MAGA, for those who are listening who are going to have friends and family, and I'm sure many listening have friends and family who are still in the thrall of MAGA, I think that being disillusioned with politics and disenchanted and then supporting Trump for those reasons, I think that those were relatively anodyne and non-controversial reasons. I don't think that those reasons are applicable any longer, but there was some validity to being motivated and guided by those beliefs at the time. And that's really how I went from this third party, very disgusted at politics voter to supporting Trump and being all in on the MAGA movement.
Yeah, I mean, the cynicism you're talking about, that's very common. I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, certainly when you see politics today, it's very easy to be cynical about what's going on. Was there something about Trump himself that you found attractive? Like, were you a fan of The Apprentice, or did you know much about Trump? I mean, everybody knew about Trump. He's kind of famous, right? But yeah, was there something about Trump in particular that you thought energized you?
What attracted to me as a candidate, as he is a candidate, what I found particularly enticing is that I had concluded several months after he declared that he didn't actually need the job. And so because he didn't need the job is why I believe that he was going to do the job for the right reasons, make the country a better place. I also figured out that both parties saw him as a threat. And as someone who voted for Ralph Nader several times, as an example, I supported Ralph Nader in the year 2000. I was 23 years old, living in New York at the time. He was this iconoclastic, maverick, rogue candidate. I saw Trump very similarly. The one difference, though, is that unlike Ralph Nader, Trump was loathed by both parties, the Democratic and Republican parties. So when I figured out that both parties saw him that way, I was in, because I thought that's exactly the kind of person I want as president. Now, on one hand, Nat, people maybe figured that out and thought, well, that's exactly why I don't want to vote for him if both parties can't stand him. I had the exact opposite view. My view was, no, no, no. If both parties see him this way, he's got to be the right guy for the job. And then I was in. And so it was not a lot of thought process behind it, but those reasons were important to me at the time. And I suspect for there are some I've known over the years who have communicated to me similar, that they've said that because he wasn't from government or politics or military, that made him a particularly compelling candidate. And I think, again, that is logical, and it stands up to scrutiny based on how he was running at the time as a candidate. And yes, I looked the other way on the statements he made about women and Muslims, the statement about the late John McCain. You know, those were not remarks I defended, but I believe that the alternative of Hillary and the Democrats were worse. And if you believe that the alternative is worse, and I got all in on the movement itself, it became easier for me to overlook some statements that, looking back on it now, were indefensible. And I knew that they were not, I know they didn't warrant justification at the time, but when we make a decision, we find ways of determining that that's the right decision. And we do continue to overlook.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And just looking back on it now, do you think your enthusiasm for Trump was more heart-centered or head-centered, or a little bit of both?
Predominantly heart-centered. You know, there was not a lot of consideration given to political philosophy or ideology. That's something about MAGA that I think is important for listeners from my perspective, if I can offer. The value I bring is experiential. And ideologically, Knapp, there really is not anything in MAGA that is shaped by policy. The closest to ideology in MAGA is a conviction that liberalism and liberal democracy are the sources of all of our personal and national ills. Now, I didn't think of it exactly that way when I was in MAGA. It's not thought about it precisely that way right now, but that's what the shared common enemy of being in the MAGA community was, that belief about democratic institutions, liberalism, and liberal democracy. So I wasn't giving a lot of, my support wasn't really cerebral. It was much more emotional, leading with, as you say, leading with the heart.
And when did the doubts start to set in?
I feel like this is a self-defense on my part, but I want to mention it because I think it's pertinent to the conversation. There were times privately that I and other MAGA Americans criticized Trump. After Charlottesville was an example. During COVID, we knew that Trump was mismanaging COVID. We knew it. But just like in 16, I was working to get the president reelected. So while we might censure him, sometimes quite harshly, privately, we never did it publicly. Because if you were in MAGA and you criticized the president publicly, you were exiled as a MAGA apostate and a heretic. That's why, for example, any information that would remotely refute or challenge the pervasively held mythologies and beliefs of MAGA, it was shunned. It was kept out. And I know people are going to hear that, and I can already feel the response that's coming from others hearing, oh, it sounds like a cult, sounds like a cult. MAGA does not fit, in my view, the definition of a cult, even though I do agree that there were some cult-like aspects for me personally. You know, I never took Nap an hour off from MAGA. It was my life. It was my being, my personhood, my identity. So there were these factors about COVID. There were the stolen election lies. I knew that we had lost. There was January 6th. But the accelerant for me actually happened, in addition to those reasons, in late summer, early fall of 2021. And that's when my governor, Ron DeSantis, was platforming anti-vaxxers at his pressers. I didn't think the COVID vaccine was going to kill anyone. I admit that I didn't take COVID seriously, but I didn't think it was a bioweapon. I didn't believe it was a ploy by the Democratic Party to keep us from winning re-election. I never believed that. And I didn't think the election had been stolen. And then when Ron DeSantis, whom I thought showed very strong leadership, actually, in fairness in the first year and a half of the pandemic, all of a sudden, he's got people who are talking about the vaccine changing your RNA. That shocked me and created confusion. And it was at that moment when my doubts commenced. And I did something after that that sounds so simple, but it was profoundly life-altering for me, which was I diversified my news and information sources. And I started to learn more about January 6th. And I also started to understand that people with whom I disagreed were not the existential threats and enemies that I had believed them to be. And so I went through the next many, many months vacillating between being in and being out. I would have a doubt. I would hear Trump, for example, talk about he'd have another lie about the election being stolen. And I would say, can I really keep supporting this? But then I would look at a photo of an event at Mar-a-Lago I went to, for example, and I would say, no, we're hitting a rough patch here. I'm on the right side, just got to tough it out. And I would go through that for many, many months. And then there was early February of 2022 when the Republican Party called January 6th legitimate political discourse. I didn't agree with what happened on January 6th. I knew people who went. I didn't go. I thought it was a purposeless protest, but people went and rioted against the Capitol. And what I was actually upset about at the time, Nap, was not that I knew officers were going to get hurt. There would be possible casualties. I was angry that I felt like the insurrectionists were going to harm our chances of a comeback in 2024. So my concern wasn't the humanity. It was damage control and political future. So when I'm going through my doubts, and we've got the Republican Party saying legitimate political discourse, that was another factor for me that just it got me questioning over and over again, can I continue to align with this? And then the final straw for me happened May 24th, 2022, and that was the day of the Uvalde school shooting. Now, I'm a firearm owner. I actually conceal carry a firearm every day. I'm a believer in responsible ownership. But I knew that day, I'm driving, if you can imagine, I'm driving white-knuckled on the steering wheel. I'm listening to the reports on the radio about the school shooting, knowing that children would be casualties and that there would be many. And I knew what the Republican response was going to be to it. It was shortly thereafter Uvalde that I quietly quit and I left. But you know what? Something was nagging at me. I was always so unapologetically public in my support for Trump. I felt that I needed to be unapologetically public in my renunciation of MAGA. And it was on August 30th, 2022. That's the exact day. It's my leaving MAGAversary, as I call it. I wrote a mea culpa. And in that mea culpa, I said that I supported Trump for what I thought were the right reasons, but I was wrong. I wanted to show remorse, and I wanted to apologize to anyone I'd hurt. And if you can imagine this, I've got my hand on the mouse. The little arrow is on the publish button. Yeah. On one hand, Nap, I'm exhilarated. But on the other hand, I am afraid because I know that once it's published, it is permanent. And it was the permanence that made it scary, but I did it. And the moment that I did it, I actually never believed that anybody would care. God's honest truth. I did not think anyone would care. And as soon as it went online, instantaneously getting comments, Rich, can you talk to my mother, my brother, my son, my father, my parents? I was completely oblivious and naive to just how many relationships had been torn asunder by the MAGA movement. But I knew the moment I did it, Knapp, I had no regrets then and no regrets now. It was the correct decision for me to leave.
Wow. All right. So I want to hear more about this diversifying your news sources, because this is something we talk about a lot, about how we have these media bubbles. There's definitely a left-wing media bubble that some folks sure. are in. And then there's the right-wing media bubble. So what were your news sources before, and then what happened? How did you diversify those?
In MAGA, most of the media I consumed was media that I was writing for as an aspiring pundit. It was The Federalist. It was American Thinker, American Greatness. I wrote dozens and dozens of freelance stories for a site called WorldNet Daily. Run by a guy named Joseph Farah, WorldNet Daily is where the Obama birther conspiracy originated. And I knew that, but I didn't care. And I wrote all of these stories without pay. I was never paid for any freelance stories. And I didn't care about that either, Nat, because that was part of the crusade. That was part of the mission, as being this patriotic political soldier who was on the right side of history, and everybody who was not with us, they were on the wrong side. So I was, for example, another site was a site like Breitbart. Breitbart was the site I consumed more than any other media during my time in MAGA. Even Fox News, even though I watched Tucker Carlson, we viewed Fox News in the MAGA community as CNN and MSNBC light. We say, oh, it's Vichy, wow. Squishy Republican media. Yeah, it's better than CNN. Yeah, it's better than, let's say, the New York Times. But Fox isn't that great. Yeah, they've got sometimes an anti-Trump slant. This is what we thought in MAGA. So even though I would watch Tucker and I would sometimes tune into some of the other shows, I wasn't really relying on Fox. For me, it was more the Breitbarts and the other sites that I was writing for. And of course, at those sites, I lived in the comment section, because that's where you could be a MAGA rabble rouser, very much so in the comment section. But then once I diversified my news and information sources, you start to discover facts that challenge what maybe were sincerely held but incorrect beliefs. You know, you diversified news and information sources. I realized, well, Democrats weren't really coming for our guns, or they weren't importing foreigners and brown people to replace white people. They weren't indoctrinating our children into becoming transgender Marxists, which I don't know what Groucho, Harpo, Zeppo, Chico, and Gummo ever did to the Republican Party, but you know, let's keep the Marx name out of there, you know, and that's what we heard. That's what I believed in MAGA. And then going from those sources to just mainstream, then going to mainstream sources like your New York Times and your Washington Post and your Atlantic, right? Media that's been around and established for a century plus in some cases. What you come to learn and is makes it hard to leave MAGA is that so much of the beliefs that we had accumulated over many, many years turn out to be false. And there are really two, for me, there were two primary reasons that made it so hard to leave. The first was you're walking away from a community. MAGA is not a cult, it is a political community. That's what it is at its core. I knew that if I left, I'd be walking away from a second family. And not just a second family, but one that sometimes I'm embarrassed to say took precedence over my own blood family. But the other reason that also made it so excruciatingly difficult to leave is that you had to come to this liberating but painful realization that so much of what you believe turned out to be false. And it wasn't just that it was false, but you created a sincere persona around these beliefs. And so I like to paraphrase Ernest Hemingway on this point, that my epiphany happened gradually and then suddenly all at once, because there was this constant turmoil and personal tumult as I wrestled with having to increasingly understand that what I believed was wrong. And that's what everyone who's left MAGA has gone through to some extent. And we've got other testimonials. People can read them at our site, leavingmaga.org. We've got a very diverse assortment of people who left. Some were young men. Some had, they were evangelical Christians who had a crisis of faith and they wound up leaving. Everyone has an individual experience, but those who read the testimonials will see some, there's a leitmotif throughout these stories, which is it's coming to this conclusion of being mistaken about something that was so crucial to your identity. But we decide that because it was wrong, that we change our minds. And as we change our minds, we evolve and grow as individuals. And that's what everyone who's left MAGA has gone through.
Did you have any friends or family members that were non-MAGA that were concerned about you and trying to help you as you were going through this?
Yes, yes. In fact, one of the parts of making amends when I left MAGA is I went to all of my friends whom I had considered to be an enemy to me because they were blue voters. And to understand this, Nap, it wasn't, for example, that I picked up the phone and called many of my closest blue voting friends and said, we can't be friends anymore. It's just that I drifted away from them because I had new friends and a new second family with those who were in MAGA. But what I did is I called every one of them and I said, I respect if you won't accept my apology, but I need to say that I'm sorry that I thought about you a certain way because of how you voted. And everybody accepted my apology. In fact, one in particular who was very influential to me in college gave me a lot of second chances that I did not deserve. He said to me after accepting my apology, Rich, I always knew that you'd come back. And I bring this up, Nap, because for those listening who have friends and family, I am imploring all of you, please do not give up on those closest to you. I recently developed and produced a video. We've got a blueprint that's in a book that we wrote, which is a free book, no strings attached, which is a how-to blueprint for friends and family on how to talk to friends and family who are in MAGA. And I know it's a tough ask to request of people who are not in MAGA to go and re-engage their friends and family. But the ones who are not in MAGA, I view them as our allies right now, because we're going to need their empathy to show those who are in MAGA that as they start to have doubts, which I prognosticate is going to happen, we want to give them an exit ramp. We want to show them that there's a way out. There's a new community at Leaving MAGA where you can come and join us without judgment, without ostracization. So I'm very thankful that I have a wonderful assortment of friends who realized that even though they didn't agree with my politics, they never gave up on me and they welcomed me back into their lives.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you're definitely on the right podcast, Dan. I think a lot of our supporters have come to us because they have friends and family members who they love, who they care about, and that they're concerned about because they're going down this road of political extremism and they just want some help, want to understand what to do about it. And, you know, and the first thing I say is understand you're not alone. This is a lot of people are going through this, and you can find a community of folks who are also going through this and can help with resources. So that sounds like a great resource. We will definitely work to share it as much as we can. You had mentioned that we met at the principal's first conference. So this is kind of related to what I wanted to say next. So at the principal's first conference, I heard you give some remarks on that opening night. And one of the things was you said, don't give up on your MAGA friends. And there was kind of like a little, like a moan. I don't know if there was actual boos, but it's kind of like, oh, throughout the audience. I was a little frustrated at hearing that, or disappointed in hearing that. And I call it like the Joe Walsh wing of Principles First. Joe Walsh, the congressman, who's always like, you know, they're lost. You can't do anything. Kind of
Joe's like an organized. Joe's an organized crazy. You know, like I joked with him about that. You know, I didn't get a chance to see him speak as I was at our table, but I did hear the groans. They were audible. It was not unexpected, but I felt compelled to mention it because I know when I asked the question, how many show of hands who has friends and family, I did not see anyone without a hand up.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone I saw in the sea of people raised their hands.
Yeah. And I can understand how frustrating it could be if, you know, for definitely, like 10 years, you've been like working on your, you know, worried about your uncle or whoever it is. And that, you know, and you don't see any hope, but there is always hope. There's, I just heard last week through our network, somebody who had been in MAGA, somebody's father who had been in MAGA this whole time. And then all of a sudden he left, and you know what it was? It was the Zelensky Oval Office meeting. Mm-hmm. It's like he watched that, and all of a sudden it's like the light came on. It's like, oh, that's who Trump is. You know,
you got to introduce me to this person. I need to talk to him, because if he's willing to share his story publicly, I want to give him an outlet to do that.
I'll reach out and see if they're willing to do that.
Yeah, that would be great to do that, to speak with him, because that's what we're doing as an organization. You know, we're telling these stories of people who left. And, you know, one question in that how-to blueprint actually is centered on values. And one of the questions is, what did you consider your values to be before Trump and MAGA came on the political scene? And I think for a lot of people in MAGA, that's a question that it's meant to lower the defenses, and is not one that it's not a question that is designed to cast aspersions on them. It's to get them thinking about, yeah, what were my values before Trump and MAGA came along? And then it's an opening to try to navigate, are those values affirmed by MAGA and by Trump? And when people start thinking about their values, then they think about themselves, because that's the only way to ultimately get someone to act, is that they have to feel like it affects their lives. That's something that fair or unfair was one of the challenges the Democratic Party had in this election, is that there just wasn't enough of, I feel your pain. And I don't know if the outcome would have been different if there had been more, I feel your pain, but I don't see how it would have hurt our efforts, you know, and I was a co-chair here in Florida for Republicans for Harris, because even though I'm not a Republican now, and I wasn't before Trump, I was a Republican under his first presidency. So as that surrogate, you know, I'd have these conversations about where Republicans were, where Democrats were. And I remember feeling like, as a surrogate at the time, I just remember thinking, we are not respecting enough that people are feeling pain economically. And that's not, I'm not saying that was Joe's and Kamala's fault, but it never hurt anyone to run the Bill Clinton play of, I feel your pain. And we didn't do that, you know, and the Republicans, maybe not in quite that much of an articulate way, in a cogent way, but they still did it more frequently than did the Democrats.
Okay. And we still have a little bit of time. Is there anything else from the blueprint you'd like to share for someone who's trying to reach somebody in MAGA?
Yeah, be sure, you know, reach out to us. You can actually email me directly at rich@leavingmaga.org. At our site, leavingmaga.org is where you can connect with us. I will make sure anyone who follows up with me directly, I will get them a video and the blueprint. We're in the process of getting it uploaded to our site. So between now and then, anyone who wants it, I want to make sure they're not kept waiting. So just reach out to me directly. Let me know that you heard us here, and I will get you the video. I'll get you the how-to. And I would ask everyone who decides to watch and follow this how-to, I want feedback from it. I want to know if it's working, if they feel like it's making progress. A lot of Leaving MAGA's work, admittedly, is learning on the job. So I'm trying to, the labyrinth of how to get through to MAGA people is one that I don't proclaim to think that I've mastered. And everyone's feedback is extremely valuable to me, because we're always trying to fine tune all the techniques and the approach.
And if this is your first time listening to the American Values Coalition podcast, and you want to learn more about our organization, head to AmericanValues.org. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter just by clicking on newsletter there as well. If you're watching the video feed, you may be admiring my Disagree, Be Friends t-shirt.
Love it.
You can get that also at our store. Just click on the store there at AmericanValues.org. It's great for family reunions, you know, in any sort of group get together where there might be a mixed audience. All right, I have one more question for you before we leave, Rich. Sure. Suppose somebody found this podcast there who were actually in MAGA, but maybe starting to have some doubts. So they're just curious. You know, what's your message to somebody who's listening who is still a MAGA supporter?
Sure. I would like to emphasize to that person that I don't believe that he or she is a racist or Nazi or a misogynist, that I think deep down that they are a good person. If they're having doubts, I would ask them to consider listening to those doubts and knowing that if they were to go through their own odyssey of potentially and inevitably leaving MAGA, that they have a community with us at Leaving MAGA of like-minded individuals where there is no ideological purity test for anyone who decides they want to become a member of our community. But I would really stress and emphasize that they listen to their conscience, they listen to those doubts, don't suppress them, because listening to those doubts is how eventually we grow to make the decisions that we think are best for our life. So for anyone who's hearing it, who maybe is MAGA or having doubts, get in touch. Get in touch. Let's talk. I want to talk to you without any kind of judgment, because that's the work that we're doing now, Nap. We are as much as we are about friends and family, we are also very much for those who are in the MAGA community right now. So all are welcome at our group.
The group is Leaving MAGA. Thanks for joining the ABC podcast.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Nap.